So what do you think your superpower is as the founder of Vitalink?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, looking back, I think something that has been a common thread for me is I'm one of those weird right brain, left brain people. So my best subjects in school were art and math, or if you look at it, statistics. And usually those are completely two different hemispheres of the brain and they do not connect. But for me, I love being creative, but I don't want to be just creative. I see the business side of it. And a lot of people can either see one or the other, but not both. So for me, I think the big piece that gives me an advantage is being able to have that understanding of both sides.
Heroes are an inspiring group of people, every one of them from the larger-than-life comic book heroes you see on the big silver screen, the everyday heroes that let us live the privileged lives we do. Every hero has a story to tell, from the doctor saving lives at your local hospital, to the war veteran down the street who risked his life for our freedom, to the police officers and the firefighters who risk their safety to ensure ours. Every hero is special and every story worth telling. But there is one class of heroes that I think is often ignored. The entrepreneur, the creator, the producer, the ones who look at the problems in this world and think to themselves, you know what, I can fix that, I can help people, I can make a difference. Then they go out and do exactly that by creating a new product or introducing a new service. Some go on to change the world. Others make a world of difference to their customers. Welcome to the Hero Show. Join us as we pull back the masks on the world's finest heropreneurs and learn the secrets to their powers, their success, and their influence so you can use those secrets to attract more sales, make more money, and experience more freedom in your business. I'm your host, Richard Matthews, and we are on in 3, 2, 1. Hello and welcome back to the Hero Show. My name is Richard Matthews, and today I have live on the line Jean Fraser. Jean, are you there?
I'm here. Good to see you.
Awesome. Glad to have you here. I know we chatted a bit before, but I always like to find out for our audience, where are you calling in from?
I am calling in from Raleigh, North Carolina, the Research Triangle Park area.
Nice. We were just in Charlotte, North Carolina, like 2 weeks ago for a business event that I was a sponsor of. So we were just up that in that area, which is it's really pretty.
It's a fun city. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really nice. And then our audience knows we travel around regularly. So we are currently in Central Florida. We'll be here for most of the summer. So we travel full time. So that's always fun. So what I want to do before we get too far into the episode is I go through just a quick bio so my audience knows who you are, and then we'll dive into your story. So Jean Fraser launched Vitalink in 1996 after she saw the best interests of clients taking a backseat at her work at Fox and NBC. She wanted to have more of an impact. She holds a BA from University of Florida and was named a mover and shaker and top catalyst entrepreneur by Business Leader Media. She is Safe Sport certified, and she serves on the following boards. She's an online learning consortium, diversity, equity, inclusion task force, the K Yao Cancer Warriors, Living Arts College Advisory Board, Cause for Pause, Board of Directors, North Carolina State College of Agriculture and Life Science External Relations Advisory Committee, and the CEO of Action for Diversity and Inclusion, which is quite a laundry list of things that you're on boards that you're on. So I'm going to start off with this first question, which is, who you are, what you do, and who do you serve? Like, what's the main offering you have in the marketplace?
Okay, so I am Jeannie Fraser, as you mentioned, president and CEO of Vitalink. We're also a founding partner of HBCU Grow, which that is, HBCU stands for Historically Black Colleges and Universities. And over the years, our focus has been health, education, and equity. So HBCU Grow is looking at the historically Black colleges and universities out there and what kind of resources and things can we do to help them build their base, to build their student enrollment, to build their giving. We put on a conference and do quite a bit of things to help in that industry. So I think that's one of the things. We're very purpose-driven. Right now, a lot of our focus is helping clients in the healthcare ecosystem unlock hidden revenue opportunities. So a lot of that comes from focusing on patient advisory and education, and we've got a great process that helps us do that.
Yeah, and so that's what Vitalink does, is you help. And is your main client the patient, or is your main client like the hospitals and the doctors?
The main client's going to be more hospitals, pharma, medical device, that type of thing. And we work at better connecting them with the patients. So right now there's some still mistrust or disconnects between some patient segments, and we really help bridge that gap.
And how do you guys do that? Do you guys do that with software or with marketing, or like what's the way that you manage that outcome?
through just about every tool you can think of. So we use a little bit of AI and machine learning. We do a lot of community involvement. We've got an internal process that's been time tested over the years. So we've kind of taken the best of a results-oriented marketing firm, but we've also partnered with an impactful mission of a leading health equity org that was recently featured in Forbes. So it's not just our team helping to kind of bring these things to life for that healthcare ecosystem. It's a group, you know. It's when you talk about superheroes, this is almost like the super friends. So we've established a larger team to be able to really take things to the next level.
Yeah. And so the primary goal then is to help like the underserved populations get better access or more use out of the healthcare that they have access to.
Yeah, it is. And a lot of people may think, okay, we've already checked that box, we're doing that. But I think you can see with COVID and everything that happened there, those things aren't really handled the way everybody thinks they are. There's still mistrust, there's still disconnects, even though some providers are amazing at seeing things and prescribing them, sometimes things are missed. So is there some cultural competency that needs to be worked on between, you know, maybe it's the pharma end and maybe instead of just selling features and benefits, there could be more education in that cultural competency, which might help them open up that market. Maybe there's some features that could be done of internal folks, which really helps them better connect with the market and establish a greater trust. There's lots of different working pieces that can go on to make that happen. Each one of them is going to be a little different for each client, but there's definitely a path that has been tried, true, and trusted. So following that path and figuring out what are the best ways with each client to basically get that accomplished.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know in the intro you mentioned that you started Vitalink in 1996, which is quite a long track record for any company. So I always like to, on this show, we talk about your origin story, which is, you know, every good comic book hero has an origin story. And it's the thing that made you into the hero you are today. And we want to hear that story. Were you, you know, were you born a hero, or did you start, you know, were you bit by a radioactive spider that made you want to start, you know, Vitalink 20 something years ago? Or did you start in a job and eventually move to become an entrepreneur? Basically, how did this get started?
That is a great question. And I love the superhero angle. And mine's kind of two parts. So as a little girl, my parents were amazing and they made me think I could do anything. And they allowed me to be the very unique individual that I was. You know, sometimes I'd wear one red shoe and one blue shoe just to show my differences. But I can remember as a little girl, my mom even saved this note for me and put it in a special photo album. I wrote a note to my dad basically saying that I was running away from home because he wouldn't be happy if someone else did the same job he did and got paid twice the money. And so if you look at it back as a little girl who was writing with crayons on a note page, I was fighting a battle of kind of equity and, you know, fairness at that time. And, you know, I think my dad always thought, oh, it'd be my brother who would start a business. I was the one in the family who started a business. It wasn't my brother. My brother actually came to work for me for a while as well. But so the superhero part, my origin story started early, just as a little girl, really fighting the good fight and seeing things out there that I felt like needed work. But then also when I was working in the television industry, I really saw that clients sometimes weren't getting the most out of their agencies. You know, I had one agency I worked with one time, and I will try not to give too much details because I don't want to out anybody. But basically, we had put together this huge promotion with the NFL, and they would get appearances, tickets, point of purchase, on-air mentions, like all this great stuff. And we negotiated the deal and it was a done deal. So they were going to get all this. And before it kind of finished up and we started talking, it started going on with, you know, how do you want me to proceed with setting up, you know, appointments with your client to make sure this all gets done. She said, you know, it just really sounds like too much work. Can you send me a t-shirt? So she had this amazing promotion worth hundreds of thousands of dollars with the NFL that was there for her client, and she would rather have had a t-shirt.
Wow.
And that was like, that was one of the things that really like stuck for me. It's sometimes harder work to really do more to make sure your client gets the best value, but it's why I started this. It's why I started Vitalink.
Yeah, I get that. I know I resonate with the little girl thing, not because I was a little girl, but because I have three of them. And my littlest one is the one that wears two different shoes. She'll wear a sandal and a sneaker and will refuse to wear them together because she needs to have two different shoes and two different socks to go with them. And I'm like,
gotta be different.
Yeah. She's a fiery one too. I keep telling people she's either going to cure cancer or blow up the world, and there's no in between. So,
and I could have gone either way too.
Yeah. It's like, you know, she's going to do something good or she's going to do something and it's going to be big.
Yeah.
I guess whether or not it's good or bad depends a lot on how we do it raising her.
That's true.
Yeah. So I always like to dive into, you know, from your origin story, I mean, man, you guys have been, get into the business, been doing it for a long, long time, started off early. What is, over the course of time, the superpower that you've developed in your business, right? I mean, you know, every iconic hero has their superpower, whether that's like a fancy flying suit made by their genius intellect or the ability to call down thunder from the sky. You know, in the real world, heroes have what I call a zone of genius, which is either a skill or a set of skills that you were born with or you developed over the course of your career that really energize everything else that you do. Right? And the way I like to frame it for my guests is, if you look at all the skills that you've developed over the course of running this business, there's probably a common thread that sort of ties all those skills together. And that's where you'd find your superpower. So what do you think your superpower is as the founder of Vitalink?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, looking back, I think something that has been a common thread for me is I'm one of those weird right brain, left brain people. So my best subjects in school were art and math, or if you'd look at it, statistics. And usually those are completely two different hemispheres of the brain and they do not connect. But for me, I love being creative, but I don't want to be just creative. I see the business side of it. And a lot of people can either see one or the other, but not both. So for me, I think the big piece that gives me an advantage is being able to have that understanding of both sides, have an understanding of, it's kind of like people, planet, and profits. Is that, where, you know, all three are important. And sometimes people can only see one slice of it. So as being able to look at kind of that larger picture and get that there needs to be revenue, there needs to be, you know, something that is going right in terms of how you're treating people or what you're doing with them. And there needs to be the right approach creatively, visually, you know, verbally, to be able to connect with them. But it's also, how do you put people and partners together? So it's a complex amount of layers within the organization, from messaging to visual to partnerships to media channels and the rest of that. And I think that that's the gift, is being able to really put it all together and make it have meaning and make it come to life and actually get those real results, and understanding that sales are important and you've got to be accountable for what you do. I mean, we're not just here to make pretty pictures and, you know, win awards. I'd rather, you know, hit sales goals any day of the week than win an award that someone gives you just because it looks so creative, but it might not even mention the name of the client on there because that's cutting edge. And I'm thinking, how can it work if you don't mention who the client is? So really, I think that that's enabled me to take a different look. And within that, this new business direction that we've been heading a little bit more towards with the healthcare ecosystem, we realize that there's this cycle, like there's this healthcare sales cycle. It costs $2.6 billion to get a drug to market.
That's a lot.
A lot of money. 36% of them don't meet their sales goals.
Yeah.
So you're talking about spending a lot. So what happens when they don't make the sales goals? Well, a lot of companies are just going to like double down on marketing, double down on, you know, outreach to providers, and they're going to spend more money. to make sure that they hit their sales goals, which weren't as effective. And they, I think that they're not stepping back to see, is there any part of this process that's broken? So, you know, sales don't hit expectations. And so maybe they think, okay, we're going to reach out to the patient instead of just the doctors, which you see all those ads on TV now for drugs. They all look the same, right? Like yeah. It's all happy people doing fun things. And in the background, you hear this long list of side effects and the rest of that, but they all look the same. So if you're trying to do that to brand yourself and differentiate, how can you differentiate if they're all looking the same? So, you know, it's one of those things that I think they follow the leader and they follow a process, which has worked. I mean, you can't say that pharma hasn't made some money and done good things, but it ends up being this cycle that can kind of repeat again and again. And research has shown that most CEOs believe that their revenue growth comes from new products. So you go through that whole cycle and then you think, oh my gosh, we need more revenue. So guess what? $2.6 billion for a new drug and you're starting again. So we feel like there's a better way. So we've been able to kind of look at that, break that down and find out how do we address that cycle so that you can make more of your product before you lose your exclusivity or your patent. So like how can that 36% figure of people not meeting their sales goal, how can that be changed? Well, maybe it's by reaching out differently. Maybe it's by doing things just slightly differently. We're not saying that we're replacing anything that goes on. There's so much that goes right within that industry. This is like an add-on level that can really help bring them a different end result.
Yeah, absolutely. So your superpower is that connecting all those things together, right? Connecting all the things that make for getting the actual end result they want, which in this case is, you know, being profitable.
Yes.
So that's interesting. And I know like the connector role is, it's one of those, I don't know exactly how to phrase this. It's a role that you have to be able to speak a bunch of different languages, right? You talked about a little bit with like the different sides of the brain, but like you have to be able to talk to, you know, the different groups of people in each of those categories and speak the language that makes sense to them. And so like that connector role, like you can see and communicate with the artists and you can see and communicate with the accountant just as well, right? And connect all those together. It makes you a really good facilitator for deals probably.
Well, and that is like such a key point, like getting down to sort of the basic element of this is sometimes people aren't communicating in the way that the other side needs. And, you know, and they're going so fast and they're following such a pattern that they may not even realize they're missing it. Like just showing someone who's Latino or American Indian in an ad is not going to check the box and make it completely work. Let's say you're using the word stakeholder in an ad that's got, you know, an American Indian. Well, stakeholder is not a happy word for them. You know, stakeholders were the people who came and took the land from them. So there's some things now that you just like understanding those pieces and really getting that language right and getting the approach right means everything.
Yeah, absolutely. So if your superpower is that ability to connect and communicate and help get those things working properly in your industry, flip side, of course, is the fatal flaw. Right? Just like every Superman has his kryptonite or Wonder Woman can't remove her bracelets of victory without going mad. You probably had a flaw that's held you back. For me, I always struggled with perfectionism, still do to this day, right? Which is, you know, keeping you from shipping something because you want to make it a little bit better before you go. But I think more important than like what is the flaw is how have you worked to overcome it so that you can continue to grow your company and continue to have the success that you have now without being stopped by that. And hopefully our listeners will learn a little bit from your experience.
Yeah, having to pick just one. You know, I think the perfectionism definitely there. Early on, I would say my fatal flaw was I like a challenge so much. No matter what industry came to us, I thought I could bring results. And basically we did. Like if you look at our early history as an agency, we've worked with just about every type of client from sports to education to healthcare to even like time clocks, you know. So it was this wide range because I like to challenge so much and I thought we could bring those great results. And I think as a business person, that's a fatal flaw and it's not a great business plan. you know, to have to be an expert in so many industries. So over the years, how we've handled it is we've realized what things do we really do best, and not just what do we do best, but what do we love doing the most. And that's where we've had to narrow our focus down and come to that.
I'm alive.
Yeah, education, health, and equity. And that's where, like, I just get excited and my team gets thrilled and they all have so much buy-in. And when you can have that kind of passion about what you do, it's the difference in everything. And so being able to narrow down and not trying to be everything to everybody has been something that's really helped us get a better focus.
Yeah. I had a similar experience, you know, as an agency. I tell people you can niche in two different ways, right? You can niche down to an industry or you can niche down to a specific deliverable, right? Yeah. And, you know, and if a deliverable is applicable to multiple industries, you can still be wide that direction. And a lot of agencies will do what you've done and niche down into an industry. And then our agency, we niche down to a very specific thing, right? We do just podcasting for businesses, right? And so, right. So that's the only thing we do. And we used to do all the other things that go into an agency, right? Everything from ads to creative and all the other stuff that goes into there. And I'm like, nope. But when we narrowed and you learn to say no to everything that's not that one thing, it really helps you build processes and build expertise and build like the notoriety in the space. And there's a lot of benefits that come with narrowing down your business. And it's hard, especially as a young business, because saying yes means, you know, revenue, but saying yes also means hard revenue if you say yes to the wrong things.
You are so right with that. And looking at it, especially someone who does like a challenge. So, you know, being able to come up with those processes and procedures and really make the agency work better. That's been helped for me by bringing on people who specialize in the processes, in the procedures, who think differently than me. So on my team, I don't want everybody around me who thinks just like me, you know, because we're going to have a lot of ideas, but then someone is going to have to implement them and it may not be me or anybody else who thinks like me. So putting together that team that had the different strengths in those different areas allowed us to also make the processes that were able to make our business run more smoothly and make our results more repeatable and scalable. And, you know, at the end of the day, we're still excited and have passion about it, but we're scalable, we're more profitable, and that allows us to be able to do a better job for our clients without all the worry.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And, you know, I'm in the same boat learning. For me, it was learning how to say no was a prerequisite to learning how to say yes aggressively. Right. And so when we learned how to say no to all the things that didn't fit into our area, that allowed us to start saying yes to a lot of things that did make sense. And that's really what fueled our growth. So it was actually like it was a really big lesson for us to learn in our business. So
can I come back and just ask you a question of like, I'm dying to know, why podcast? I mean, I love your concept and I think that you've chosen correctly, but I'd love to hear your story.
Yeah, absolutely. So podcasting, the reason why we got into the podcast space is because that's the thing that makes me come alive. And it comes down to one of the things that I think is universally true about human beings is that we're a story-born people, right? And what that means is we define our relationships by how much of someone else's story we know. And so you see that reflected in our language. And so if you have someone who is an acquaintance, you know, a stranger is someone you don't know their name, you don't know their story. An acquaintance is someone you know their name, but you don't know their story. A friend is someone you know their name and you know some of their story. And a best friend is someone you know their name and you know so much of their story that like the only way you get new information with them is to go out and create new stories together, right? And so like you see that reflected in our language. And what's interesting is that's the way that the marketplace interacts with businesses too, is, and you hear this all the time in this business space, is you have to know, like, and trust someone before you'll do business with them. And Google even did a study a couple of years ago that they call the 7-11-4 rule now, which is like a customer is going to spend 7 hours interacting with your content in 11 different touch points across 4 different platforms before they make a buying decision. And so for us, podcasting is a way to sort of hit both of those things for businesses, where we can help them tell their story in such a way that, like, the marketplace actually knows your stories. They know your name, they know your story, and they might even consider you a friend, even if you've never met them, right? That's one of the beauties of one-to-many communication. And then also, because of the distribution patterns, the content marketing allows them to sort of hit that place in the marketplace where they have a lot of touch points with potential customers. So anyways, that's why we narrowed down into it.
Oh, that's great. I love that. It really does boil down to people. And I used to say back when I was in television years ago, it's almost like the Oprah effect. When you see someone on TV, you feel like you've developed a relationship with them and you trust their word a little more and you connect with them and you want to follow things they follow. And used to be businesses operated differently, like you didn't give your political views, you didn't give any kind of information. But now I think people want to know about businesses more. They want to know what you care about. They want to know why you do what you do. So being able to share that and really tell the story is huge.
Yeah, yeah. And I think being able to show up and share your story and share who you are and the values you have as a company, right? And so, like, even our internal company podcasts, we're starting to bring on more and more of, like, our staff members and talk about the different things they do. And so it's not just me, but it's like actually like our company and our culture and the way that we show up in the marketplace. We use our podcast as a way to put that out there. And so I think it's really useful.
I love that. Yeah, for our clients, we look at featuring not only their clients who've had success stories, but some of their internal team members who've also had success stories, because that helps, you know, just create a better atmosphere all the way around.
Similar yeah, absolutely. Thing.
Yeah.
So I want to talk then about your common enemy, which I think this is going to be a fun question for the business you're in, right? So every superhero has an arch nemesis, right? Mm-hmm. It's a thing that they constantly have to fight against in their world. In the world of business, we like to put this in the context of the clients that hire you, right? And it's a mindset or a flaw that they have that you're constantly have to fight to overcome so you can actually get them the result that they came to you for. So in the world of Vitalink and what you guys do with the health space, what's the common enemy that you have to regularly deal with?
Oh gosh, I think that the biggest enemy is thinking that, like, checking the box is enough. Like, if they just do a little, they're going to be able to reach a different audience. That they don't, yeah. You know, they don't put a little bit more understanding and time in. You look at it with politicians, they show up at the black churches when they want people to vote for them. Yeah. If you're just showing up before you want something from someone, they're not going to be likely to give it to you. But if you show up in the in-between times, that makes a whole difference because you've developed a relationship with those people. So for me, it's understanding that sometimes it's hard because it's not just a box you have to check, but that there is still sort of that trust gap. And yeah. But the trust gap can be overcome. Like, there's ways to do it through partnerships. There's ways to do it through, you know, different types of community outreach and marketing that don't cost as much as the typical channels and the typical methods you would do. It's amazing the difference, but just knowing that, like, so having enough self-awareness to think, okay, I thought I had it covered, but maybe I don't. So the common enemy would be maybe someone not understanding that there's a better way.
I think I could draw an analogous for people that I think everyone would understand because I've seen it happen over the last 10 years, which is Hollywood's attempt to be diverse and inclusive by taking a story and then just pulling one character of one color out and putting another character of another color in, and then destroying the story in the process. And so then you have a terrible story with the boxes checked. And when people go to watch a movie, they're going to watch a story. They don't care particularly about the boxes. And so they're not actually doing the thing that needs to be done, which is to build a good story with the characters and with the people that you want to be inclusive with. And so that's sort of where what you're talking about is, like, you know, just because you have a drug that is useful for, say, the Black or the American Indian market, just because you take the same ad and just swap the characters out doesn't mean that you've talked to that person or talked to that culture or talked to the things. You have to actually, like, show up and try.
Yeah, you definitely have to show up and try. And it really does come down to just treating people like people. And I mean, there's so many interesting things. Like, to just take a story and flop out different characters, like you said, is a little lazy, but it is kind of what's happened. But there's so many interesting stories if you dig deeper, and so many pieces of inspiration that you learn that maybe you weren't ever taught before. I mean, there's, you know, we love going out on our travels and exploring new cultures and historic things. And, you know, I had no idea, like, some of the things that went on, because we just weren't taught that. Like, we weren't taught those things in school. So, you know, when we were in school, you know, Native Americans or Latinos may have been shown as, you know, less than, because they didn't have the European history or the whatever that comes from this side. But if you look back at their civilization, they knew astronomy well before we did. Their engineering on buildings is far superior. Like, there's so many things that you go back and you look at. They were, you know, developing and had mercury and the ability to create that before anybody knew that, you know, how that would happen. So looking behind, there's just so much more behind every story. And, you know, how do you find that and just become a little more human and talk to someone one-on-one, because your patients and your clients are basically just human beings.
Yeah, that's one of the things that goes right back into your question earlier about why we run podcasts. I mean, it goes back to, you know, one of the reasons why the Western culture is so pervasive is because of the printing press and their ability to write their histories and tell them and get them yeah. distributed in mass. And a lot of other cultures didn't have that for hundreds, sometimes thousands of years.
Or if they did, like the Spaniards came over and burned all the writings from the Native American or the South American Latino population. So, you know, you had people who had it and they burned it. You know, so difference. Yeah.
Yeah. So being able to tell your stories, I think it's one of the most equalizing things we can do on the planet, is make it so everyone can tell their stories.
Yeah. And also, like, not just tell your stories, but have people hear it in a real way. So yeah. Like, I went to the doctor once before about a very serious concern I had. And, you know, I'm not the kind of person who runs to the doctor for much. I've displaced my hip and didn't want to go get it fixed. I mean, I can be tough. So for me to actually get to the point to go to the doctor is a big deal.
Yeah.
And I get into this doctor and I talk to them about what was going on. And she treated me like, oh, I was just a silly little girl. That, like, why are you worrying about that? That's just like anxiety or this or that, or you're imagining things. And I'm like, no, this has been going on for this long. Here's what's happened. And they just honestly did not take me seriously. It was cancer. I knew something was, you know, so to have someone take the information that you're giving and not listen to you and then, like, negate it.
Yeah.
Is, you know, that I guess that's another like superpower thing, going back of something that really impacts you, because if they had listened differently, how different that kind of conversation could have gone, or how different my relationship would be with that doctor who I never went to see again, obviously. But, you know, those kind of things shouldn't have to happen. Like, you should be able to convey something and have someone truly listen.
It reminds me of something my wife and I have talked about before in the medical industry, where, like, you'll see, like, because we're kind of nerdy, we read medical studies, stuff like that. And, like, you'll read this study, like, you know, for one of the things that's relevant to us is birth control, right? We're at that point in our lives and we've got three daughters. We're going to talk about it a lot more in the future, right? And we look at those things and they're like, yeah, they put this drug out and it was only tested on, like, you know, one small subsection of the population, right? It wasn't tested on Black women. It wasn't tested on Native American populations, or young it wasn't tested women. At all, or young women or old women, or, you know, like, or like, there's no like inclusion in the testing process. And then so the conclusions that they come to are incorrect. And I've seen the same thing, like, that happens a lot with men versus women, where studies will they'll be all men in the study for the drug, and then they'll just assume that it affects a woman's body the same way and put the drug out.
Now, the drug, I will say, you know, I don't want to badmouth drug companies, because they've come a long way, but drug companies in the past did for heart drugs, heart disease, heart attacks, they would test men and apply it to women, just like what you were saying. And women have far different symptoms for a heart attack than men. It's not the clutching the chest and the pain, and it's not that. It's something completely different. And so, you know, if you've got drugs that are out there that you haven't tested as widely, you may get clearance. You may get people, you know, FDA giving you, okay, check, you're good. Let's send it on through. And then it goes to market. And all of a sudden you start having problems with the drug because it doesn't work as well with certain populations. They had one drug within the past, oh gosh, probably 10 years, and I love reading the medical stuff too, that came out, it got approved, and it was used in a lot of older adults. Well, they hadn't tested it enough with a diverse brown and black population, and it ended up having some pretty serious side effects. So the FDA basically, even though you had approval for it, they came back and said, Social Security will not pay for this drug until you test it more with these populations. So they actually had to send it back. So it's like, and I know getting those populations really to test is hard because you're working from a history of people who were sort of abused with medical testing over the years, but having a relationship that's built earlier on and making sure that those people are included in your testing and finding ways to reach out to them and engage them more in the process just ends up costing the system less. You know, there's, I think the figure is like $320 billion that's impacted by lack of equity.
Yeah, it's absolutely
crazy.
Which I think brings me to a good place for the next question, which is your driving force, right? So if your common enemy is what you're fighting against, your driving force is what you're fighting for, right? So just like Spider-Man fights to save New York or Batman fights to save Gotham, what is it that Vitalink fights for? What's your mission, so to speak?
Well, you know, to make education, precision medicine available to all people, no matter where they live, no matter what their gender is, no matter what their sexual orientation is, no matter what their ethnicity is, everybody should be able to have access to those things, to good education and good health care. So for me, that's, you know, that's what gets me excited.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because the space you're in, like it's, you mentioned liking a challenge and getting the whole of the population to trust the medical system, especially after what's happened over the last few years, it's a big uphill battle. And like you see that in the cases where they didn't appropriately test a drug. And so it has adverse effects on certain populations, whether that's men or women or different colored skins or, you know, different body types, whatever that is. And every time they make those mistakes big and publicly, it erodes the trust in the market that has to be rebuilt again. So it's like you're fighting a constant sort of uphill battle that, man, we have made some tremendous strides with our medical stuff. Cause like every single one of my children has had some sort of a sickness in their childhood that 100 years ago was a death sentence.
Yeah.
Right.
Me
every
too.
Single one of them.
Me too. So
and me too. And
so like the example I gave before with the 2.6 billion and, you know, if the sales aren't good, then they're going to double down on reaching out to providers and they're going to spend more money on marketing, which by the way, a lot of drug companies that are out there spend more money on marketing than they do on R&D. So do the math on that one with 2.6 billion to get it to market, that marketing is more expensive. But if you look at that, it just could be such a different conversation that you would have with someone. What if you doubled down as being the company out there that's going to embrace communities like this that are different? What if you double down on engaging them a little bit more so that you are the most trustworthy company out there for this group? There's ways to do that. We've got a path, we've got methods, we've got ways to partner. But what if that were the difference? What if instead of throwing billions and millions of dollars at this, you could throw a lot less money at standing up and becoming advocates for this side? Huge difference it could make. Huge.
Yeah. And it's like, and it's not even that, you know, you have to focus on the different populations. Like the populations exist and they need the solutions you have. Mm-hmm. So So build the stories and build the testing and build the stuff that goes into it, right? You see that a lot in the, I'm going to forget it, the injections. What are the injections called? When I can't even remember what they're called. When someone gives you an injection, so you're protected against the disease, whatever those are called.
Oh, like vaccinations, yeah.
Vaccinations, that's the word I was looking for. It escaped me for a whole minute. It's a huge discussion. But you see that where there's a lot of eroded trust in that space for the same kind of reasons. We're like, yeah, your vaccine schedule for a child now, it's got 100 vaccines on it, none of which have ever been tested together. So parents are like, I'm afraid of that because you've never done the testing and shown me that it's safe.
A lot of African Americans saying, I want to wait a little longer to see, make sure that like it goes okay with people in my community who are taking it. But I think it also helps, like in instances like that, the COVID vaccine was in part developed by an African-American scientist.
Yeah,
that was a huge trust building factor in that. So, you know, again, you know, other ways to connect those pieces, but building trust by, you know, being a little more transparent of how things are done.
Absolutely. So that's a good common enemy fight, good driving force to run for. I want to talk practically how you manage a company like this. We call this your hero's tool belt, right? It's the practical portion of our show. And just like every superhero has their tool belt with their awesome gadgets, like their batarangs or their web slingers, their laser eyes, or, you know, maybe a big magical hammer you can swing around and fly with like Thor. Talk about the top one, maybe two tools that you couldn't live without to do what you do. Could be anything from your notepads to your calendar to your marketing tools, something you use for your actual delivery, or something you think is essential to getting your job done on a daily basis as founder of a company like yours.
Oh gosh, I think there are two things. Is the right process and the right people.
Yeah.
You know, when you have those two things in place, that allows you to take your time to make sure that you're guiding the ship and you're working on the direction and that you're really being able to manage the client expectations and the higher level picture.
Yeah, I love that because side note, I haven't announced this yet, but we're working on a newsletter called Push Button Nation or Push Button Process. I haven't just quite decided on a name, but it's all about how do you build processes that really leverage human talent and resources alongside robotic talent well. And because, man, it's people and processes are what makes, it's what solves problems in the world, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
man.
Can't just be so many ad agencies, all they're about is showing, oh, we delivered this many thousand impressions or this many clicks, or it's about work product. And I think that process for it to be really meaningful has to be about the results you get out of it. So we work, our process is more around a results-oriented outcome. We want to have figures that we're held accountable to, not just how many people visit a website, but how much product did you sell? How many doctors are now prescribing your product? You know, factors that are really going to mean a difference versus just, oh, well, we have, you know, so many thousand, you know, hundreds of thousand more eyeballs on our website. Well, okay, that's great. You had them on the website. What did they do after that? You know? So for us, it is gearing the process and the people to always focus on the results.
Yeah, yeah. And it's an interesting thing in the agency space, and I see why it happens, right? Because you have, I can't remember exactly what the term for it is, but you have your leading factors and then your non-leading factors. And it's like, what are the things that I can control, right? Yeah. As the agency, you can control the number of people who hit the website from the ad, right? And so that's what you talk about and report on, but you're like, but you still have to like, why did we drive the traffic in the first place, right? Yeah. It was to get a specific result. And it wasn't just for the fun of sending people to the website.
And then what did people do with it once they got to the website? Did the client actually handle those leads?
Yeah, yeah. And we talk about this in sales a lot too. It's like, hey, you can't necessarily control whether or not someone's going to buy from you on a sales call, but you can control the number of sales calls that you're on and the process that you're in. So people will talk about those leading metrics and then not talk about their close rate, right? So you see that happen in the sales space too, but you have, like, if you don't have the close rate, then, you know, you have to talk about both sides in order to have a picture of like what you're actually delivering.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
So I love that. Speaking of heroic tools, I want to take a few minutes to tell you about a tool we built that powers the Hero Show and is now this show's primary sponsor.
Hey there, fellow podcaster. Having a weekly audio and video show on all the major online networks that builds your brand, creates fame, and drives sales for your business doesn't have to be hard. I know it feels that way because you've tried managing your show internally and realize how resource intensive it can be. You felt the pain of pouring 8 to 10 hours of work into just getting 1 hour of content published and promoted all over the place. You see the drain on your resources, but you do it anyways because you know how powerful it is. Heck, you've probably even tried some of those automated solutions and ended up with stuff that makes your brand look cheesy and cheap. That's not helping grow your business. Don't give up though. The struggle ends now. Introducing Push Button Podcasts, a done-for-you service that will help you get your show out every single week without you lifting a finger after you've pushed that stop record button. We handle everything else: uploading, editing, transcribing, writing, research, graphics, publication, and promotion, all done by real humans who know, understand, and care about your brand almost as much as you do. Empowered by our own proprietary technology, our team will let you get back to doing what you love while we handle the rest. Check us out at pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero for 10% off the lifetime of your service with us, and see the power of having an audio and video podcast growing and driving micro celebrity status and business in your niche without you having to lift more than a finger to push that stop record button. Again, that's pushbuttonpodcast.com/hero. See you there. And now, back to the Hero Show.
I want to talk about one more thing here, and that's your guiding principles, right? One of the things that makes heroes heroic is that they live by a code. For instance, Batman never kills his enemies. He only ever brings them to Arkham Asylum. So as we wrap up the interview, I want to talk about the top one, maybe two principles that you live your life by and you run your company by. Maybe something you'd wish you'd known when you started out Vitalinked, you know, 20 plus years ago.
Oh, I think partnerships and client relationships only work if everyone gets real value.
That's good.
And when you get real value, you know, we developed, our clients stay with us a long time, and they stay with us a long time because we make it work for them. And so I think that that's probably a big one. And then the second is just making sure that my guiding principle is that I'm operating in an area that I get excited about and I know I can truly make a difference in.
Awesome. So I like the everyone gets value in a transaction because it's, you know, it's baseline. It's how the capitalist structure works. It's all volunteer and it only works when
we can't do it for free. But,
yeah,
you know,
we have to have a mutual exchange of value.
They're happy to pay us.
Yeah. We're we all want to mutually agree that this is a thing we want to do and we want to exchange value with one another. And man, that's it's how we solve the big problems is mutual exchange value. So yes. I agree. So I think that's a great place to wrap our interview. I do finish every interview with a simple challenge I call the Heroes Challenge, and do this to help get access to stories that we might not find on our own. So the question is simple. Do you have someone in your life or in your network that you think has a cool entrepreneurial story? Who are they? First names are fine. And why do you think they should come share their story with us here on the Hero Show? First person that comes to mind for you.
Oh, gosh. I would say Dr. Alex Carlisle. So he is CEO and Chief Scientific Officer of NADPH, that's the National Alliance Against Disparities in Patient Health. And he's the one who's using AI and machine learning to help solve health equity issues in this country. And he is brilliant and uses all of his tools and superpowers. And he's got, oh my gosh, a great story behind it that really I think your listeners and viewers would love.
Yeah, well, we'll see if we can reach out and maybe get an introduction. Maybe they'll come on and share his story. They don't always, but when they do, we get some cool stories out of it. So thank you for that. And then, you know, in comic books, there's always the crowd of people at the end who are cheering and clapping for the acts of heroism. So analogous to that here on this show is where can people find you if they want your help in the future? Where can they light up the bat signal, so to speak, and say, hey, Gene, we'd love to get your help marketing our company, right? And I think more importantly than where is who are the right types of people and companies to reach out to you?
So I would ask people, they can connect with me on LinkedIn. So it's Jeannie Frazier on LinkedIn. You can go through Vitalink as well, or they can email me. It's a long email. So it's Jeannie@vitalinkweb.com. Happy to have an email. Our best potential partners are organizations who serve people with issues like diabetes, diabetic complications, maternal child health issues, who'd like to know that there's another way to build their business rather than doubling down on providers and just spending more money on marketing, that there's a better way that they can do it with less money to have better results. So that's going to be our best potential partner.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with us today, Jean. Really appreciate just the time and your willingness to share your story. Do you have any final words of wisdom for our audience before we hit the stop record button?
Oh, gosh. Do what you love. Go out and have fun and listen to some more of these podcasts. I love the hero theme.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Jean.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of The Hero Show, where we work to shift the cultural narrative around entrepreneurship and celebrate the heropreneurs who make our world a better place. Don't forget to visit our website at theheroshow.tv, where you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, or via RSS, so you'll never miss an episode. If you found value in our show, we'd truly appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or better yet, share it with a friend to help us spread the message of entrepreneurship as a force for good. Curious to learn more about the stories and insights of these incredible heropreneurs? Check out our in-depth interviews and resources on our website. Together, let's support and inspire the next generation of entrepreneurs as they embark on their own heroic journeys. Join us again next week for another episode of The Hero Show, where we'll continue to explore the world of heropreneurs, their superpowers, and the positive impact they bring to our lives. Until then, stay heroic.